You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's News Talk 830 WCCO's Live Outdoors
with Ron Shera and Mike Max.
A rare night off for Mike Max. Steve Thompson sitting in, but Ron Shera is here. All is right in the world. Ron, how you been?
I've been great. Pleasure to be with you, Steve. Have you heard from Mike Max yet?
I have not. I have no idea. Points unknown. We'll go with that again. Points unknown.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it has to do with finding ducks. I think it has to do this time of year generally. In all the years I've been sitting in for Mike Max, this time of year, he's generally looking for ducks.
You're using the plural of ducks.
He sent me
a picture the other day of him holding up a duck, one duck. And this is kind of his season quota, you know. And so I'm surprised.
One duck per year.
Yeah. So that's why I'm surprised he's not here because you know, he considers that his limit, getting one duck. And God bless him. You know, he's out there trying. He doesn't have all the hunting skills in the world, but he's sincere. And he's got a lot of passion for a duck. You know what I mean?
No, yeah. I mean, he's by golly, he's going to get one. One way or another.
Yeah, I think he went a couple
years. Put a lot of miles on for that duck.
He went a couple years without getting a duck, but he kept bringing up stories about the time that he did get the one duck. So, you know, the guy's, you know, he's got a reputation to uphold. And so we all understand that.
I get the feeling he's gonna call in. That this is kind of like the bat signal that we're going to hear from Mike Max before the show is out tonight. Now, speaking of ducks, I was over at girls soccer earlier in the day doing a game on cable TV. By the way, Maple Grove beat Champlain Park, upset number one Champlain Park this morning. But the guy I was doing the game with is a retired coach, Pete Hayes from the Anoka area. Really a good guy. He and his buddies just got back from a duck hunting trip up to Saskatchewan. And I'd never heard that guys from these parts go up to Canada to shoot ducks.
Made
the drive all the way up to that. That is, now I know Canada and fishing and that sort of thing, but he said it was quite a hunt. He said it was a great time.
Steve, for years I went to Saskatchewan.
I'll be darned.
It's 1,400 miles. I can tell you the mileage.
Yeah.
We go to Wadena, Saskatchewan, and I heard this year that Saskatchewan's a little dry, which is not good for ducks. Usually when you get water in the springtime, you get ducks as a result. Yeah. But it was a little dry, and I have some dear friends of mine never went up there this year. The last couple weeks, with these big storms coming through, you know, 30, 40-mile-an-hour winds from the northwest, it's been quite a deal. And then you read about the radar, they think they found 600,000 or I don't know who counted.
Yeah,
these
up
birds.
In the Aiken area.
Yeah, well, that was at the National Wildlife Refuge, the Rice Creek National Wildlife Refuge, not Rice Creek, Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge, and
that's right out of Aiken, correct?
Yeah, in that area. Aiken, McGregor, up in there.
Yeah.
And those are, I'm sure, all ringnecks, but still remarkable. Because Minnesota raises a lot of ringnecks, and we seem to be the center of migration for ringneck ducks, so that explains what happened there. And but years ago we used to be lesser scaup, bluebills, but we don't have that anymore. So been a lot of changes. Dennis Anderson wrote yesterday's paper, and I don't blame him. A lot of us that have hunted ducks in Minnesota for years are under the impression there definitely aren't the birds there used to be, but the Fish and Wildlife Service keeps saying ducks are 10% above the long-term average, and nobody can believe that. I don't either. Anyway, but I guess my point is this last couple of weeks has been worthwhile being out there if you're a duck hunter at all. North Dakota got all that snow, and I don't know how much of it's still left, but that pushed a lot of birds into Minnesota. So it was the year. Now, I spent last week a few days hunting South Dakota pheasants. Really can't give an update on because where I was at is called Lone Oak Lodge near Clark, and it's a typical hunting lodge operation. They bring a lot of people in. We had guests there, sponsors for our TV shows, etc. I mean, they put a lot of birds out, you know, yeah. from a pen, and so you know, they fly, they die, the dogs have a good time, so do the guys, but. You can't tell what kind of a natural hatch you're dealing with out there. You can tell what birds are what, so you know 99% of them are pen raised. So I have no way to tell from my experience what the pheasant hunting in South Dakota has been so far in the real world, so to speak.
Yeah, and on your travels, I would assume there's still a lot of crops in the fields.
I don't think any of them are out.
Yeah.
And
that's a huge deal as we move forward into firearms deer season.
Oh, yes. We're going to have a reduced deer kill for sure in southern Minnesota because a lot of deer, they're going to be in that corn. So hopefully
things dry out. We do need it to dry out.
Don't tell me.
Help those farmers out and then certainly help the hunt as we move forward. Ron, we've got a good show. What have you got coming up?
We're going to talk. We're going to talk to Barbara Keller, DNR's deer management specialist, coming up here. Talk about the upcoming deer season, and then later we're going to talk to Josh Stevenson, Muskie Guide Deluxe. If you want a big muskie, this would be the time to do it. So we'll see you later.
All right, we have got more on Live Outdoors. Ron Sharon, studio tonight here on CCO. It is Live Outdoors, Ron Shera. In studio, Mike Max is away, Steve Thompson and Chris Tubbs, our producer tonight on the program. And we're going to talk deer right now, Ron.
Well, we are. We've got a big event coming up in a little less than 2 weeks, the firearm deer season. Roughly 600,000 Minnesotans pursue deer every year. I think roughly 500,000 of those are firearm deer hunters, but our first guest tonight is, she knows more about this than I do, DNR's Barbara Keller, the big game program supervisor. Good evening, Barbara.
Hi, Ron.
Listen, are you a deer hunter?
I am. I didn't begin deer hunting until I was an adult. I didn't grow up in that sort of family, but I did kind of teach myself as in my 30s, how to deer hunt.
Well, very good. Are you going to be out there this weekend, or you're too busy to do that?
No. I won't be able to get out there probably until after the first week of deer season. Unfortunately, yeah, there's a lot of work that goes along with being the big game program leader during deer season. So I don't get to see much of opening day.
Well, I'm sure sometimes the second weekend's better anyway in zone two. But, well, just as an overview, Barbara, what's it look like out there throughout Minnesota for deer? We mentioned earlier that all the standing corn is going to probably cut down the deer harvest in the southern half of the state. Overall, what's your view?
Yeah, overall, you know, aside from those sorts of factors related to crop harvest. It looks like it's going to be a pretty good year, especially for, I would say, the northwest central part of the state and the southeast. You know, our deer populations have had several years of relatively mild winters. You know, I know some folks, you know, probably think last year was a pretty severe winter for deer, but from what we're hearing, it didn't really have much effect on our deer populations. And the exception there is the extreme northeastern part of our state. They probably had a little bit harder of a time than the rest of the state. But those several years of relatively mild winters means that our deer populations, for the most part, are on the upswing.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine today, something I hadn't thought of, and that is we mentioned this, the unpicked corn is still out there. But a lot of the northern Minnesota woods is going to be wet. Creeks are going to be high, perhaps flooded. So I think there's going to be some guys going trying to get to their deer camp and not being able to do so without a boat, for example.
Yeah, that's another factor that, yeah, that's difficult for us to predict and control. But yeah, the, from what I'm hearing, it can be pretty difficult out there in northwestern and northeastern Minnesota right now. So definitely we're advising folks to be aware of that. Hopefully get out there and scout what the situation there is ahead of time, and definitely, you know, give themselves a lot of time to figure the situation out before they get out there.
You know, Barbara, some people say, you know, Wisconsin doesn't open their season until the rut is kind of winding down, and some mm-hmm. other states do the same thing. Minnesota always has this tradition of having the season open right kind of in the heart or peak of the rut. Where do you come down on that?
It's a trade-off. So previous to my time here in Minnesota, I came from Missouri and managed the deer program there. And their season structure was actually really similar to what it is here in Minnesota. So it was the gun season there in Missouri was time to begin and start with the peak of the deer rut, which actually is a little bit later down south. And we, you know, we heard from both sides there as well, folks that would rather see it pushed back later, which would mean that fewer bucks would be harvested because, you know, obviously bucks are much more vulnerable during the height of the rut. And so some hunters would rather see it be pushed back and spare some bucks and have bucks move into older age classes. And I could certainly see that line of thinking. On the other hand, you have other hunters who have just grown up in the tradition of hunting during the height of the deer rut and really value being able to participate in that and see all of the behavior and the activity that goes along with that. And so in general, when we're looking at declining hunter populations, you really have to weigh changing a long-standing tradition, you know, against what potential benefits may arise from changing the deer season timing.
Yeah, well, I would say this, you know, it's not the bucks that have the fawns. I mean, you're
right.
So if you want to maintain a deer population, better you protect the mama deer, so to speak.
Oh, yeah, certainly when it comes to affecting the population, it all comes down to the does.
You mentioned declining deer hunters. You and I did a TV interview not too long ago, and you mentioned it then, too, the decline in number of deer licenses. Young people are not deer hunting, I think, is what you said.
Yeah, well, what we're seeing is we're not having enough young deer hunters to replace those that we're losing or actually about to lose. There's a kind of a looming cliff that we see coming with the baby boomer generation, which constitute the greatest proportion of our hunters. And I will say that we've been able to keep hunter numbers relatively steady over the past 10 years, but we are seeing a slow decline. But what is most worrisome is that we know that the largest proportion of our deer hunters is constituted by this baby boomer generation. And we kind of see this impending cliff where we know that we're going to lose them, and we're just not recruiting enough young deer hunters to replace them.
When some people would say, well, who cares? That means there's more deer in the woods for me. But I know the answer to this, because hunters are the main source of finances to manage our wildlife and fish. And without mm-hmm. hunters, we're in trouble.
Right. And not only that, they're our main tool to manage the deer populations. You know, in a lot of some parts of the state, we don't have large predator populations. And so hunters are our main tool. And, you know, a lot of the public is going to take notice when we no longer have hunters to manage deer populations within the goals that we set. And that's a big concern. Another concern is that hunters are really one of the greatest conservationist groups that we have as well. And they do a lot of management in the name of deer that benefits many other wildlife species.
Yeah, very well put. Before I let you go, anything especially new that deer hunters should know before they head to the woods next mm-hmm. week or so?
Yes, you know, our biggest regulation changes as far as our gun season is concerned affect those that are in our disease management areas, so
right.
That's chronic wasting disease. So if you hunt in the central portion of our state near Brainerd, or around Meeker County, or in the southeastern portion of our state, please pick up a regs book or go online and see what the regulation changes are. Because even if you weren't in the disease management area last year, it doesn't mean that you're not in one this year, because changes have been made. And we have regulations regarding bringing your deer in to get sampled for chronic wasting disease. We have regulations regarding if you can bring your carcass out of the area where you've hunted it. And so please go online and see, or pick up a regs book and see what those changes are.
Barbara Keller, one more thing. We're entering the big car deer collision season as these bucks get on the move and some does with them. People just have to slow down, especially at the bewitching mornings and evenings, right?
Right, yeah. And you know, it's kind of an unfortunate coincidence that we're also, as we move it further into fall, it's obviously we're getting closer to the deer breeding season, deer moving around more, but also the commute time unfortunately coincides when deer are moving around as well. So those all contribute to the increase in deer vehicle collisions that we see.
Yeah, something like 30,000 of them a year, something like that. Is it?
Yep.
Yeah, something like that. Barbara Keller, a big game program specialist for DNR. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Thanks for having me.
There you go.
Right. And Ron, a quick follow-up before we break here. What can be done to get more people out there? We've seen the schools in this clay target shooting just explode. Is that a potential group that could be recruited to become hunters?
Well, that's part of it. People like we've talked about that. A certain percentage of those kids that are into trap shooting will perhaps then move on to try hunting. But it's a big issue because it's just not enough. Now, we've got a high school fishing league starting, and that will help. And some of those kids that get into fishing will eventually maybe get into hunting. In some states, finding a place to hunt with a youngster is difficult, but that's not the case in Minnesota. We have a lot of public land where deer are, national forests, state forests, etc. They just, DNR just held a youth deer hunting season, and they sold a record number of youth licenses just last weekend. So I don't know all the total numbers there, but every little bit helps. But we got smartphones and sports duties. My own grandson, I mean, he can hardly go anywhere with me outdoors because they have some sports thing that the coach insists you have to be there or you're going to be out. I find that very unfair and very selfish of coaches these days.
Yeah, and it is a big issue, though. As she pointed out, there is a cliff coming up where the numbers are going to take a steep drop, and that's going to be big problems budget-wise and conservation-wise all over the state. Quick break. We got more Live Outdoors. A little bit later on, do you have muskie fever? We're going to talk to a guy who caught it, I would assume, many years ago in Josh Stevenson. So we'll talk muskie fishing a little bit later on in the program. Ron's in studio. It is Live Outdoors Monday nights, sports schedules permitting, between 7 and 8 here on the CCO. Ron Scherer, Live Outdoors. Mike Max is away. I'm surprised we have not heard from Max. We've been keeping an eye on the phones. He has not called in. So either there's good news and he doesn't want to brag, or it's bad news and he doesn't want to give us bad news on his hunt.
Well, he was talking the other day. He was subbing. He was subbing in the afternoon, I think, and he had this discussion about getting lost. And he told his story about he went out in this duck slough and started walking in circles. I'm guessing that's probably happened again. He doesn't carry a compass. Maybe he doesn't know how to read it. I don't know.
Or he dropped his phone in the slough.
He dropped his phone. Yeah. So he could be wandering around out there somewhere asking for his mother. I don't know. Mommy, come help me. maybe not. And what was I going? Oh, Barbara mentioned the deer population is pretty good shape throughout the state. I tell you what, I got some buddies of mine with these trail cameras now are remarkable, and you can be sitting in your living room and check your deer camera at 8 o'clock at night and see just what went by. I'm seeing some pictures these friends are sharing with me are some really nice bucks on the move already, making scrapes, doing their thing. It's if you're a buck deer, it's an exciting time to be in the woods. But also true if you're a deer hunter. Lots of things going on at this time of year in the deer social life for sure.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little fishing with Josh Stevenson coming up in a moment. But I wanted to bring up, have you been out? I haven't seen you in a while. Were you able to catch some fish this fall, or was it just too much of a challenge out there again weather-wise?
No, well, weather-wise has been a challenge. Just a lot of wind and everything else. But I did get out a week ago up in the Woman Lake chain. We caught some walleyes. Quite a few anglers out, but as it turns out now, that was the last hurrah. You know, some people put on their long underwear and their snowmobile suits and they get out there. I think our next guest, Josh Stevenson, he was up on Mille Lacs today. He said it was a little cold, but, you know, he's younger. He'd probably be out there. But most of us, as we get older, we go, well, you know, it's a little chilly out there. I think I'll pass. But I took my boat in today to Frankie's. That's a sad time.
That is a sad day when you put the boat away for the season.
I patted it on the head and I gave it a kind of a kiss and I said, "I'll see you." Do you realize? You realize you're basically at 6 months unless you one of these guys. You put your get your boat in March and go fight the
snow. Go out to the river.
Go to the river where you have some fishing. Otherwise, basically. Figure it out. Count your fingers. It's 6 months until the walleye opener.
Yeah.
So that's half of the year we're sitting around wishing we could be fishing.
Well, you know, it was funny. I drove by Frankie's on the way to a football game out at Chisago Lakes High School, and I drove by, and I thought of you, and I said, at some point, Ron's going to be popping in here, dropping off the boat for the season.
Well, that was today. Now, I know there's some guys out there who love ice fishing. Yeah. They go, what are you talking about? Man, I can't wait till the ice gets here. Yeah. And I understand that. But if you like open water fishing, which I do, that's a sad day today. But that's the way it goes.
All right. Speaking of fishing, Josh Stevenson joins us on the line. How you doing, Josh?
Great. How about you guys?
We're doing great, Josh. Thanks for joining us. Do I understand you were musky fishing today?
Yeah. Well, this, like you kind of hinted on, this is a bittersweet time of year for me. It's like it's the best time to catch a musky, yet I'm so sad it's so close to the end.
Yeah.
And you got to go ice fishing.
And Josh, let me give you a little formal introduction. Josh, you own the Blue Ribbon Bait in what suburb is that again? I keep forgetting.
Oakdale, Minnesota.
Yeah, and you're quite a story. We did a Minnesota Bound story on you. Steve, if I can just share with you, Josh was a kid working in the bait shop. Time went on, and the bait shop owner finally turned to him one day and said, well, how would you like to buy this place? And he did. And
how about that?
That's a great story. Josh, you mentioned this is the prime time to catch a muskie, but it's also the coldest time. What were you doing today?
I was up on Mille Lacs. I just got home now. I had a client that wanted to go there, and I'm always really eager to go there because it's going to like Jurassic Park. So you're looking to, you know, hit a home run. So that's you got to have the right patient level if you're a muskie angler to deal with places like Mille Lacs. And I've had a trailer up there. I really like it. I'd rather like spend weeks up there and dial it in. But most of the money that I can make in the guiding world comes from the Twin Cities because like 60-70% of my clients come to the Minneapolis airport and they don't want to drive 2.5 hours to Mille Lacs. They want to grab one of our bodies of water right in the metro.
Yeah. And of course, Mille Lacs is big. It's a tough place to start if you don't know. But I've been told that the muskie population in Mille Lacs has been going down. Do you subscribe to that?
I would for sure subscribe to that, yes.
Well, that's
especially
sad.
Talking to a few guys at the boat launch today, they were pretty frustrated. There's been guys out there 7-8 days trolling 8-10 hours a day that haven't caught a fish. There are other variables you guys talked about earlier in the show, too. There's really high water. There's a lot of flowage coming into the lake. It's dirtier water. So there is Mother Nature controlling it all. So I'm not sure if you can exactly prove that the numbers are down or not, but fishing's definitely tougher this fall.
Yeah. Now, why is this a good time to chase a muskie?
I think kind of segueing into what you were saying about the rut with the deer, it's almost like there's a rut with the muskies. I mean, I've kept it basic, even explained it to my kids. You know, we see the squirrels go five times a day now across the yard bulking up for winter, and you can compare a big muskie to a big squirrel, I mean, or a chipmunk or what have you, something grabbing, getting something to store up for the winter, because they're pretty inactive in the winter, and it's really hard to get them to bite, you know, in terms of ice fishing. So they just bulk up so much right now because they know the end is coming. And there's also, especially on Mille Lacs today where I was, there's a big tulipee spawn that's happening really soon. And they know the tulipees are going to get grouped up and they're going to be right on them when they're doing their business. And it's such a wonderful time to be out with them because you get the biggest, heaviest fish of the year, and they're probably the most aggressive and most active right now.
All right, I have to ask this. You know, the first book I ever wrote was called Muskie Mania, and it's not because I was a muskie fishing expert, but as a writer and being out with guys watching them fish for muskies, I was enamored with what that fish did to these people. I saw a guy, he caught 103 muskies that summer, and when I was with him for the 104th, he caught a little 32, 33-incher, and he was shaking like a leaf, just so excited. I'm serious.
Yep.
Let me tell you, you're no different. You're no different. What is it about that fish that keeps you going out there on a cold day like today?
Once it's in your blood, it's kind of hard to get it out. Muskie fever is something that is contagious. I've had guys even have a follow up of a muskie, and they'll come back to the shop and spend $1,000 on all the gear. Just because they saw one, you know, it's
addictive.
And the thing is, too, they're such a curious cat. They're so hard to figure out. It's the hardest freshwater fish to really dial in and pattern because they're changing constantly. So once you think, I got the hot lure and the best retrieve and the depth and speed is perfect, then they'll start lazily following it. You're like, okay, what am I doing wrong? This worked last week and the week before, and the weather and water conditions change, and then you have to change as an angler. Where other species of freshwater fish, they're not changing as much, and they're not as evolved as the muskie. It seems like the muskie is just, it's like, especially the bigger ones, are like, if you're anybody who's got a cat or is a cat owner, they're like that old cat that just, you know, that you need a new toy to get them to be interested. Because if you're throwing the same thing at that old cat, they're going to get lazy. They might look at it. They're not going to pounce on it. They're not going to certainly chase it across the living room like they did when they were a kitten. So you have to keep reinventing ways to get that creature to move, and that's what's so intriguing about it and awesome about it, is because you can never dial it exactly in and have your little game plan hold. Well, all of a sudden, go ahead.
No, that's a great way of looking at it. I always told people, listen, this fish is at the top of the food chain. It can do whatever it wants. It can eat you. Eat whatever it's looking at anytime it feels like it. And that's why it'll follow your lure right to the boat, sit there and look at you, and then swim away. So they do have this mystique about them.
Yes.
I'm curious, you mentioned you don't catch them much in the winter through the ice, yet the close cousin, northern pike, are very catchable through the ice. What the heck's going on there?
A little bit more of an aggressive gene. I think, you know, that if you look at spawning in the spring, who's the first to spawn? It's the northern pike. It's like as soon as they're able to get up in there, sometimes there's even still ice on the bodies of water, and they're right in there spawning first. They're just more aggressive, a bit easier to catch. I think that just sums it up in a nutshell. That's why that tiger muskie combination of the two can be really fun to watch and to be part of, because you can get a tiger muskie that's really big and have it jump six feet in the air. It's like they're mad they got caught. And I know they don't have the genetic power to be mad, but it's like they just go bananas. You hook one, and it's like 8 out of 10 of them are leaping up in the air. Where in the Pierce Train barred muskie, you don't get that very often.
Huh. So you think it's a little bit of northern pike in those? So
I'd say, yeah.
Yeah.
A little vinegar or spit and vinegar, whatever they call it. Yeah, that type of situation.
But, you know, yeah, through the ice, you also You can fish lakes that are loaded with smallmouth bass like Mille Lacs, and you rarely catch them through the ice. You rarely catch largemouth bass, although some places a little bit more so. But there are certain fish that just kind of go into the winter doldrums. They don't feed much, and you don't catch them much, and the musky fits right in with that, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think so, too. I know years back now they closed the season December 1st, but when I was a young kid fishing muskies, Dave Gens had come in Blue Ribbon Bait and Tackle and showed me how to musky fish in the winter. He says you got to cut a big hole, almost like a spear hole, and then you can study them and watch them. And I had so much fun growing up doing that. It was a lot of people that, you know, had spear houses would tell you how the muskies behaved. So I started fishing for them out of that. But that's an old story because I know they closed the season on them December 1st now. But northern pike guys still run into them, and it's still interesting to hear from the spearing crowd and the guys targeting northerns out of a huge hole, how they behave so much differently than a northern pike in the wintertime. They just are more lethargic. They'll come in, they'll look at the bait, but the northern pike will often come in and just strike the bait and hit it hard and fast. And
right. That
is a difference. You know, they're lazy. Those follows, they love to follow. Again, it's back to that curiosity of that muskie that keeps us all coming back, you know, trying to trick them into actually biting or at least nipping at something.
I hear you. Josh, I got to ask you, I mean, you don't have to answer this. What's the biggest muskie you've ever caught?
Lengthwise was 56 and a half on Lake Mille Lacs. It had been 8 or 10 years ago now. I got a few of them that size. 2014, I got a 56 by 27. I caught the state record tiger muskie in 1999, though. That was out of Lake Alamo, and that's what put me on the map as a muskie guy, because that was before all this social media stuff. You didn't have Facebook and the internet to make yourself a guide. You had to actually get a story written by a guy named Ron Shera. You had to get on the news. You had to, like, that's how you became a guide back in the day.
Yeah, I remember that story, Josh. I remember that story. Here's this kid gets the state record tiger muskie.
Well, and I got to ask, Josh, you must still remember the feeling of that moment when you landed that fish. I mean, holy smokes.
I was out of my mind.
Yeah.
My friend at the time, Joe Radin's a great high school friend of mine, was just, we were in awe. We couldn't speak because we knew it was big. And then it's like, we got in the boat and it's like, we couldn't even, I was like in awe. I was shaking and it was like almost like an out-of-body experience. Like, am I dreaming or is this reality or what's heck? Because we were nuts as kids chasing these muskies around. I got the fever so young. You know, I got so blessed with getting a couple at age 10, 12 years old, and I was nuts about it. And back then, I mean, the statistics prove it was like 8 or 10% of people even cared about muskies. Nobody cared. Grizz was in the shop at Blue Ribbon every day catching limits of walleyes, and he was like the story of the store. It was like the walleye was a state fish. Everything was all about the walleye, but things have changed 20 years later now where it's like most of my guys coming to Minnesota and, you know, the tourism are chasing that bucket list muskie. Like, Minnesota is the state of the big Leech Lake strain muskie, and you don't get people coming in for an 8-pound walleye. And there's a lot of guys that still do that, but it's the economy part of it is like guys really know us for muskies now. You know, it's a big deal in Minnesota.
Josh, I got to tell you, you know, you and my daughter Laura have got a friendship, and you two have musky fished, and she's crazy about musky fishing. I don't know where that came from. You and Travis Frank and others instilled that in her, but she also likes to fish bass, but only topwater. I go, Laura, you can catch them with a jig and a worm, you know. Oh, no, Dad, let's go topwater. I said, maybe they're not looking up today, you know. But no, she casts for topwater whether they're looking up or not, and she spent 7 hours or 8 hours in the boat with you the other day trying to catch a muskie. I mean, as her dad, I'm fascinated by her passion for those things.
She is so awesome. You should be so proud of her because she is just absolutely wonderful on all levels, first of all. And, yeah, she has musky fever. I can't wait to take her out. We're going to get her one this fall.
Yeah, she said.
Yep. That's what she said?
Yeah, she said you promised. You promised, she said.
Yeah, we'll have to break ice. The way the weather's going, we might have to break ice. Yeah.
Josh, I'm going to let you go here, but you've been entertaining on the radio. We'll have you on again next year when the water opens up again, okay?
Awesome. Hey, thanks for everything, Ron. You're doing so great for all of us, and you've been just awesome all these years. I really appreciate it.
Very good. Josh Stevens, Blue Ribbon Bait Store down in Oakdale, Minnesota.
And we have more live outdoors coming up. Ron Shera on a Monday night here at CCO. We still have not heard from Mike Max on the program tonight. Parts unknown for Maxie. I'm sure he will return next Monday night here, Ron, on Live Outdoors.
Or he's speaking to some group, probably regaling them with stories about what it's like to hang out with me. That's what I would guess.
I would think that that would pay big bucks.
A lot of people would pay to hear his stories about me because I'm, you know, everybody's very, very interested in. And what I do and what I say, and Maxie keeps close tabs of that for sure. Yeah.
So the boat's away. You put the boat away. Firearms deer season's coming up.
I'll be out there.
Yeah. Mm. Here we go.
Yeah, I know. Winter's coming on. I still want to do some pheasant hunting. You mentioned Joe Maurer. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but I'm hoping he would like to go pheasant hunting, and I'm hope to fill that role for him.
Nice.
But let me tell you, I'm not thinking of pheasant hunting in Minnesota till December. When the ground freezes, the farmers will be able to get a lot of that corn out. And right now, it's very difficult out there. Those birds will spend all day in the corn, and then they'll come out just at the sunset and go into the grass to roost. But they're back in the corn as the sun comes up. So you really, it's tough to get any angle on the birds that are out there. And so, but once the corn goes out, I think Minnesota is going to be kind of a surprise in some places. Some of my friends down at Worthington and Marshall, et cetera, are seeing some birds. So there you go.
Yeah, but you're going to need to hang in there a little bit.
And wait, maybe hit later birds in the too.
Yeah, for sure.
I couldn't believe the water I saw out in South Dakota when I was out there. Driving across western Minnesota and eastern South Dakota, the water standing in the fields is just, it's spooky. I tell you what.
Well, you live along the Rum. I live downriver from you on the Mississippi, not all that far away as the crow flies. I still can't get over how high the water is, Ron. Here at the end of October.
The Rum today in my backyard is higher than it was last week. It's been coming up. I go, I can't believe this. It's coming up. Yeah. I'm trying to get it down so I can get my dock out. And it's too dangerous to try to reach it right now.
I thought Maxie took care of that for you. He came up and got the dock out every fall. That was a part of the deal.
I've seen Maxie handle his pontoon. I don't want him touching my docks.
Yeah.
That's so much fun not having him here. I can beat up on him, you know.
Well, I will say this. I will say this, Ron. Dave Lee and Mike Max get their shots. You know, I
know. Dave Lee was supposed to cover, you know, have my back.
Yeah.
He hasn't had anything of me. He's, you know, I took him fishing once. I put him into some huge trophy perch. And I thought that we were dear friends. I told him, Maxie's going to pick on me. You got to keep my back, cover my back. But he hasn't done it. So there you go.
All right, Ron, always good to see you. Great show tonight again. The DNR's Barbara Keller. If you didn't catch that, it will be available later on. We'll have it at the website, WCCORadio.com, or go to radio.com. You can catch it there as well. And then, of course, Josh Stevenson was a lot of fun to talk muskies. He was up on Mille Lacs today chasing fish. That is certainly hardcore. Good to see you, Ron, as always. Once again, Ron Shera, Live Outdoors, Monday nights between 7 and 8 here on CCO. Typically, Mike Max is in studio, but Mike has a rare night off. We have all the news, all the weather coming up at 8 o'clock, and then a one-hour edition of Sports to the Max. I will talk some Timberwolves. I will talk a little MLB, a day off at the World Series. And the Nats bounce back after getting swept in three straight at home. We'll get into all of that coming up following the news and weather.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.